Husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This program helps us understand how the gospel enlightens and informs family living. My name is Matthew O. Richardson, second counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and today I am joined by Elaine Dalton, who is the Young Women's General President. Welcome, Elaine.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Oh, it's so good to have you here. And I'm going to have you introduce your family just in a little bit right after we talk to our other guest, which is Larry Gibson, who is the first counselor in the Young Men's General Presidency. Welcome.
Thank you, Matt. It's a privilege to be here and to be here with Sister Dalton as well.
You know, I marvel at the fact that I actually get to sit in the same room with individuals like yourselves to be enlightened, and I mean that quite seriously, and to learn so much. And especially on today's topic, we will be talking about grandparents, to understand the role of and the influence of grandparents. And so, Elaine, this is why I said I want you to introduce your family, and Larry, likewise, is I think that we have experts here, both in parenting and grandparenting. So tell us a little bit about your family.
Well, my family consists, of course, of myself and my husband, Steve, and we have six children, and all of those children are married. We have five sons and one daughter. So, and in combination with all of those, we now have 16 grandchildren, one of which was just born last week.
Congratulations. That's
yes,
exciting.
And another little girl. So this is the fifth little girl in a row that's been born to the Dalton family. And I think it's a blessing of having the calling of General Young Woman President.
That is so great. That is great. Larry?
Thank you. And I want you to know I feel very connected to Elaine from the first day that I met her, because we have the same. We have five grandsons and a granddaughter. I'm married to Shirley Barton. She's the choicest part of my life, and she's been a great blessing in our home. All of ours are married as well, and so I've got five wonderful additional daughters. I never call them daughters-in-laws. I call them daughters, and if I have to, I call them daughters in covenant.
Oh, that's great.
And I've got a wonderful son married to my daughter as well. They've blessed us. Shirley wanted another daughter after we had our first two sons. We had a daughter and never got that other daughter. We had three more sons, and she finally decided we weren't going to. She prayed and prayed and prayed, and then the granddaughter started coming, and we have now 21 granddaughters and 16 grandsons.
21 granddaughters, 16 grandsons.
That's right.
That's great.
And so we feel truly blessed. We didn't have to do anything for these wonderful grandchildren. They just seemed to come along, and we're so grateful for them.
Oh, this is great. Well, the way I'd like to start off today is I want to pick your brains and especially fill of your hearts and the things that you have learned. I'm grateful that you bring not only the experience of being grandparents yourselves, but also through disciples, and you're great disciples of Christ, great examples for me of what we've learned to be able to understand grandparenting. So here's the way I'd like to start this off. I'm just going to have you react. And I want to play a little clip here that's a great little gathering of individuals talking about grandparents and grandparenting. And it'll set the stage in a flavoring, and then we'll just talk a little bit about your reaction from what you hear. So let's listen to this nice little clip here.
All right, so my granddaddy, he taught me that even if it's in the trash, it'll still make good spaghetti sauce.
My grandma had a lot of practical advice, like she'd always tell us to put the batteries in the fridge, as well as camera film and silver dollars.
My grandpa used to say, if you know how to say garlic in any language, you can get a good meal anywhere.
When I think of my grandma, I think of like hugs.
My grandma had this song that she would always sing. If you're a liar, you better quit your lying. You better quit your lying. You better quit your lying. She's from Tennessee, so there were multiple versions.
My grandma told me that if you try to dissect a person too much, then you're going to find the bad in them.
According to my grandma, vinegar is just good for the skin in general. She would caution you to frequently apply vinegar to your legs.
If you're a cheater, you better quit your cheating.
My grandma once told me to kiss all the boys that I could because I would never know when the right one came around and I'd have to stop.
She's a big bargain hunter. And my sister wanted this trendy little half sneaker, and my grandma looks at it, and she's like, I'm not paying twice the price for half a shoe.
My grandma just used to say, look with your eyes. Sometimes you're looking for something, so you should be open to find it anywhere.
My grandpa always tells me to kind of keep things in perspective and to slow down, really.
My grandpa told me to be the president of the United States.
I could have sworn there was like a beater in there. If you're a beater, you better quit your beating.
She always warned me about promiscuous women.
She would warn a pregnant woman to not look at a rat.
Never to eat somebody else's canned fruit.
Take it easy. Don't get too stressed. Things will work out in the end.
Don't use rouge. Use lipstick.
Stay away from, you know.
Never get old, no matter what.
All you can be is you.
Don't say no to treats. Love donuts. Live your life.
I don't know. My grandma, she's awesome, pretty much, you know.
Now, this clip was actually taken from college-age students when they were just asked to reflect about their grandparents. And I love this because there's such a potpourri of the way that people are remembering or thinking of their grandparents. What's your thoughts when you've heard this for the first time? That's what, and I wanted it that way, is I wanted just to react. What came to mind when thinking of grandparents from individuals talking about their grandparents?
I think that was very enlightening for me because it's clear that the things that the grandchildren remember aren't necessarily the things that you would deliberately want them to remember. It's more, I don't know, it's more maxims that grandparents repeat or just kind of eccentric things they do.
Isn't that funny? As a matter of fact, we often talk about legacies that are left. And I think that grandparenting, the word parenting is still there. So it's grandparents, you know, as far as that would be, is when we think about the legacy that we will leave with the rising generation, sometimes what is left may not be exactly what we thought we were leaving. I like that comment because it kind of gets you aware of saying, what's going on here?
The interesting thing to me as I heard it, you know, because many things were broadcast in my mind of my own grandparents, as well as some of the things that I noticed my grandchildren are saying about me that are my little idiosyncrasies. But fact of the matter is it demonstrates the fact that it's the one-on-one casual kinds of things that have the greatest impact on our grandchildren and our children for that matter. And I think there's studies that are showing that as well. But it's intriguing and I think very important for us to recognize that we're going to connect with grandchildren one-on-one, one-on-one.
Well, and the little things stick.
Oh, they do. The truth.
They do.
They stick.
I mean, it was funny, and this is why I like this little clip, is this was not a staged experience, and it was a potpourri of several different people. The fact that they remembered something was really quite enlightening and heartwarming to me. Well, what about your grandparents? I don't have any memories. I'm grateful that they have some. But everything, and I just jotted down things as I was listening here, is from perspective, advice, practical advice. Apply vinegar to your legs. I thought, where did that one come from? But I started thinking about parental legacies or grandparent legacies, family legacies, of things like that, of just, here's how you live life. Here's what you should do in life. Things like hugs, hug a lot, sing. My grandmother used to sing silly songs, but here she is singing them again. My grandmother told me, they warned me. And then I love that last line when it ended is, my grandmother, she's just awesome. She's awesome. May not be able to articulate, but there's something going on here. I think for sure is there's an influence. Don't you think there's an influence happening here on these individuals from their grandparents?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Almost a different kind of influence than a parent would have.
What do you mean by that, Elaine? I mean, let's flesh that out a little bit, because I think that this is really important, because when we start to look at grandparenting, some people aren't quite sure what that actually means. And you're saying it's a different kind of influence. Influencing, to be sure, but a different kind. Let's explore that a little bit.
I think from what I could hear and what I feel, the grandparents aren't the disciplinarians. They're not the primary teachers. That's the parent's role, but they're almost like they almost reinforce or amplify some things that perhaps the children have been taught in their family.
Okay.
They almost become a second witness, but they don't assume the role of the primary caregiver, the primary teacher, the one that does all of that first. that's what it seems like.
Well, I think this is an important element. As a matter of fact, I think of in 1999, the first presidency issues a letter that was read from every pulpit throughout the church. And it was a call, actually, to parents about families. And so when we look at this, in 1995, we have the Proclamation of the World on the Family, laying a foundation of this is what families are all about. And I just love the what's taking place within that document is saying, here's what we're about foundationally. 1999, this letter comes to urge us to be able to implement that proclamation. And in that letter, it says this: we counsel parents and children to give highest priority to several different things, prayer, wholesome recreational activities, etc. But here's an interesting line: however worthy and appropriate other demands or activities may be, they must not be permitted to displace the divinely appointed duties that only parents and families can adequately perform. And I think when I was listening to you talk about this, is it's not their job to displace grandparents' job, but it's to help that job work appropriately. And so sometimes I think about grandparenting as, oh, I finally reached the stage where now I don't have to do anything but enjoy the spoils. So when children come, I get to have them when they're happy. And as soon as they're not happy or they're tired, I just hand them back to the parents. I've often thought about, is that really the role of a grandparent, is just to enjoy spoils? Or how do we do what you're talking about, this concept of supporting, witnessing, helping, nurturing, et cetera?
Yeah, I think grandparenting gives an additional sense of belonging to something that's much bigger. And when we talk, you know, that reference that you just read to us refers to parents and family. Anytime
right.
I hear the word family, family is multi-generational to me. And in light of the gospel, there's also a patriarchal role, particularly in the case of grandfathers, that we have to be focused upon too, which takes a lot in a lot deeper, meaningful way than it does, I think, in the world. And so I think the fact that, you know, a young child saying, let's go to grandmother's house, and we sing the song to grandmother's house, we go on those kinds of things. It goes much beyond that, because I think grandparents can influence children in different ways than parents can, and particularly as they get older too, and they have those times when, you know, parents don't know everything, they can step in and recognize, as we saw in the clip, that, but you know, at those times, a grandparent can come in and be a second witness, as you mentioned, about something that a parent has said to substantiate and support and strengthen the role of their own parents in their own home.
Good point. Let me throw this out. What about second witness that you said of things that have been said? What about things that aren't being said? What does a grandparent do about that as far as that goes? Now, I'm not saying that they step in to be the parent necessarily, because we don't want to displace that role. But I think that there is a valuable element, we can flesh this out a little bit more, of things that are being said as the second witness. But what about things that aren't being said in homes? Where does a grandparent, what can or should they be doing in situations like that?
I think that grandchildren are keen observers. And I think that more, as President Packer once said, more is caught than taught.
Okay.
And I think that when grandchildren come to our home, at least when our grandchildren come, they have observed enough to know how things work in our home. They know where the little candy cupboard is. They know where the drawer is that has just their special dishes. I didn't teach any of that. They just observe, and they know how it works, and they know where. So I think as a grandparent, the way we really live, the real deal comes through loud and clear. And the parents teach those specifics. Hopefully we taught them when they were our children, but they soak up the reality of it all as they come and be with us.
That's good. That's really good.
Most of what we do is through example, isn't it, to our grandchildren. That can be just a tremendous influence on them. So we don't have to always speak the words, but show the words, and hopefully they'll be substantiating those of parents, and in some cases they may not. But nonetheless, we do our part in a very subtle and maybe even at times not subtle way.
Oh, I like this. When we say subtle or maybe explicit and implicit ways, I think that is an appropriate way to look at that, because it seems that some people, when they talk about grandparenting, is they're very shy of being explicit as far as that goes. But there, if I'm understanding this correct, there is a time to be a little more explicit, and there is definitely a time to be implicit, a time to be able to stand back a little bit more, and maybe a time to have a little more hands-on. Am I hearing that correctly?
Do you know, it's interesting, Matt, that I'm here talking about this, because as I grew up as a young girl, we lived with my grandparents for a time. My mother was caring for her mother. And so I lived right in that home. And then later, we built a home right next door to my grandparents. And so my view of my grandparents is really quite amazing. Of course, my view of my grandmother, I helped my mother take care of her, was just a feeling of love. She had a series of strokes and couldn't speak, but I would always sit on her lap, and I would read to her. With my grandfather, when my grandmother passed away, he would come over to our home, which was then next door, for his meals. And also, every night, he's the one who read bedtime stories to us as children. And so for me, the influence of my grandparents in my life lives on. I mean, my grandfather taught me a lot of poetry. And those poems still come to my mind. He taught me how to live the gospel almost through poetry. He'd say, you don't have to tell how you live each day. You don't have to tell if you work or play. A tried and true barometer shows in its place. You don't have to tell. It will show in your face.
Oh, that's good.
And those kinds of things are just in me now. And that's my grandfather's influence. Interesting.
I think when we start to look at this experience of what's taking place of passing legacies, I, in my own personal life, didn't have influence of grandparents. My maternal grandparents had passed away before I was old enough to really know them, and so didn't really have that experience. My paternal or my father's parents, actually, my dad's a convert to the church, and when he joined the church, he kind of had one of those experiences. If you want to be a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you're not going to be a Richardson anymore, And so there was that pushing away experience. And so as a result, those grandparents, while they were lovely individuals, they were not really embracing or a part of my life at all. As a matter of fact, I remember when they passed away, this sounds so calloused. I wanted to be emotional, but I didn't have a connection with them, and I just didn't have that. And my first experience with grandparents was actually when I got married. And so I had two grandmother-in-laws, and I feel like you were saying, Larry, as I never called them my grandmother-in-law. She was my grandmother, you know, kind of a thing. But I look at the influence she had. So here I am, an adult, actually, and my first experience in grandparenting and the blessing, it was really a refreshing experience. And that doesn't take anything away from my own parents and my upbringing experience, because I have great parents and they were doing the very best they could, and it was really a good experience. But to have a grandmother, oh my goodness, that was a new experience for me to have that additional. We talk about witnesses. We have that support system. There were things that she would say that I don't know why, but my ears were attentive and my heart was open. And we went and visited for Memorial Day recently. We went back and visited different grave sites, and one of them is my grandmother-in-law, you know, because she had such an impact upon me, and we always share. And one of the things that I mentioned, this is maybe far too personal, but I remember standing there at the graveside talking with my children about this woman, saying she always believed in me. She believed in me. And I don't know, I believe my parents believed me, but I don't know anybody who wouldn't like an additional support or a validating witness, as far as that goes, of others who can support those experiences. Does that make sense?
I think what you're saying is so beautiful, because I think one of the greatest things we can do for our grandchildren is to let them know that we have confidence in them, and we have confidence in their ability to make decisions and choices and stay on the path back home to our Heavenly Father. So I think that could be, and personally, one of my greatest contributions as a grandmother. Because I'm so busy with my calling right now, I don't have a lot of time to tend or, you know, those kinds of things that some grandmothers do.
Right.
But we can have influence along the path, just letting them know we have confidence in them.
I think that's the greatest feeling I ever had concerning my grandparents. And I was blessed on both sides of my family to have wonderful grandfathers and wonderful grandmothers. And I knew no matter what, they loved me, and they had great confidence in what I was doing. I had my grandfather on my mother's side. I remember he had a special term for me. Anytime he would see me, he says, "There's my such a guy." And that always meant a lot to me. We had endearing names for them, too. I mean, on my Gibson side, we called them Grandma and Grandpa, but on my mother's side, we called him Daddy Minor. And we called our grandmother Muzzy. Her name was Elizabeth, and one of the babies, I guess, couldn't say Elizabeth, and so that name stuck. And we just loved and cherished the opportunity we had of coming from southern Nevada up to Provo once a year to visit Muzzy and Daddy Minor. And, you know, they weren't prominent, prolific kinds of people in the things that they did. They were very down to earth and very, normal people. And yet the goodness just reeked from them into my life, says, I want to be better because of who they are.
That's so good. You know, it's interesting you bring up this experience of what you called your grandparents. That's such an endearing experience between families of, well, what do you call them? I mean, in some senses, it's grandma, grandmother, papa. I've heard that one a lot of different things. But I like the context of what you brought it up. It's a very personal, endearing experience is when we connect real people with these wonderful titles. And I like that. As a matter of fact, my wife and I had this conversation when we were going to be grandparents, is the question, well, what are you going to be called? And I had thought about it a little bit. And at one point we were teasing, we said, how about grand dude? And then when the time came when I was a grandfather, it just seemed so inappropriate. I thought, no, that's not good enough.
It's a very sacred thing, isn't it?
Yes. And I thought, that's just not appropriate now when you say sacred things. And so then I came up with the idea. I said, what about Mufasa? You're like, what? I said, that kind of has the air of passing legacy, Mufasa. And my wife just laughed. And I told my children, they're saying, yeah, we should do this. But what came about it is actually was a natural experience. What you said is it was what the grandchildren started calling me is what has stuck. And actually they call me Dadpa. And the reason was is simply because they were living, my oldest son at the time was living with us in between when they were building a home. And, my granddaughter started calling me Dad because that's what everyone else in the house called me. And that was a little problem for my son, rightfully so, is wait a second, I'm Dad. And so then she started calling me Dadpa instead of the grandpa thing. And so that has stuck. But here's the point. Regardless of the title or regardless of what we're doing is as we connect with individuals and allow this to endear us, the title, we need to be responsible of being a grandparent. The title of grandparent, however we frame that personally, that opportunity to be a grandparent is really a great blessing and it's a great responsibility. I think that's true. So here's an interesting question is how does the gospel inform us then as grandparents? For example, I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but in the aspect of we have earthly parents and kind and dear to be true to the song, hopefully, when we start to look at this context of earthly parents, and I hope I can do this in an appropriate and respectful way, but how does our Father in heaven model this? I've often wondered does he assume a grandparenting role where he respects the parental rights of individuals here on earth, but yet he is so intimately involved actually in every, Larry, you brought up generationals. Experiences. Every generation, our Father in heaven still acts as the parent. Scripturally, we talk about patriarchs, the grand patriarchs. You know, when you look at that of Abraham, Isaac,
Adam,
and Jacob, Father and Adam. And they had an endearing as well as an enduring influence, Rebecca and Rachel, on generations where if you read the Old Testament, they were referring back. No wonder they do things like, and so-and-so begat so-and-so begat so-and-so.
It was very important to them, wasn't it?
It was. It was a linking of generations. And we talk about turning of the hearts of the fathers to the forefathers and the children to the forefathers, et cetera. What do we learn from gospel settings like this that help inform us of our responsibilities as grandparents and how we can do that appropriately, or as how we've seen patriarchs and matriarchs and even our Father in heaven modeling this experience? Any thoughts on that?
Well, as far as seeing Father in heaven model it, I guess I could only view it from the patriarchal role that you talked about, these early fathers. And I'm sure that they were modeling it based on their close relationship with their Father in heaven. One of the great examples in my mind was King Benjamin when he was ready to transfer the kingdom to his son Mosiah, and he was having that last major event. I just loved the particular scripture in Mosiah 2 and 5 when it says it came to pass that they came up to the temple It said they pitched their tents and so on, and every man according to his family, consisting of his wife and his sons and his daughters and their sons and their daughters, from the eldest down to the youngest, and thereby they might hear the word of King Benjamin. This caught me at the time I read that. I had my own family, and it was just before conference when I happened to read this. This was years ago. And I thought, well, this would be a great opportunity maybe for me to teach the generational importance of families. So I had them all come camp in my backyard. They set up tents. Every single family set up tents in my backyard. And I says, I want you to face a certain direction. I have a garage that has a balcony on it. And that morning, early in the morning, I came out on that balcony with my Burger King crown on and a robe as King Benjamin.
And King Larry.
Yes, King Larry, and had the opportunity to teach them from that balcony of the importance of being able to hear from our prophets, seers, and revelators the next 2 days in General Conference. And the reason I even thought about that is I asked my granddaughter last night. I happened to be with one of them, and I asked her, tell me your thoughts about Grandpa. And she says, one of the funnest things I remember, Grandpa, is when you were King Benjamin and taught us about the prophet and the importance of families from all generations. Once a parent, always a parent, from generation to generation to generation. And that's what I see in the Abrahams and the Adams and Lehi. And they all were looking for their family, even Joseph, you know, the great scripture about him, viewing Ephraim and Manasseh, right. And he says his children were called upon his knees. And you put that into picture form, you can see him calling them together and having each grandchild and great-grandchild and great-great-grandchild sitting on his knees there.
Good. This is not a removal then. This is actually, I like what you're talking about, not only just teaching, but you're gathering. There's an element of gathering individuals, maybe literally, where you gather them together in a backyard, or it could be in other ways of way we gather and connect generations together. And that's a responsibility of a patriarch. I learned that from scripturally speaking, of that responsibility of connecting generations with an identity. As I'm passing a legacy of an identity, you know what? You're a Dalton. You are a Dalton. And so, that means something, by the way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes coming from grandparents, I think there might be a validity there. As someone who has actually lived a fair amount of life, it's sure. It's steady. It's not just a fad. Oh, you mean this worked for you in your life? It's real. Does that make sense? And it's a legacy passing.
It's a bidirectional thing. We're looking at those who preceded us, and we're also very cognizant of those who will follow us.
That's very good. That's very good.
And we need to exemplify in our own lives that steady, prolonged faithfulness that we expect of them. And I think that's pretty important, and probably exactly what you were talking about being King Benjamin.
That's the hope, isn't it?
We can't ask them to do anything more than what we're doing, really. But what I'm seeing with grandchildren is that each generation gets better. I am just absolutely in awe of my little grandchildren, and they're actually, in many ways, teaching me how I can be a better person. Isn't that interesting?
That's wonderful, actually.
Elaine, isn't it
wonderful?
Elaine, isn't it interesting? In our capacities, and young men and young women, we are recognizing how significant this rising generation really is. And yet, with everything that's going on in society and the world, how important it is they have multifaceted testimonies to strengthen theirs, which I think is a great role for grandparents.
That's so good. I think back on this experience with our Father in Heaven, and to call him a grandparent in that sense is, I don't want to overemphasize that, but in some ways, what does he do, and how does he do this? He constantly reinforces from a distance. He's constantly answering prayers. He's correcting. He's offering sage wisdom, by the way, which I am so grateful for, as do prophets, seers, and revelators, shouting from afar off saying, it's not that we're better because we're older. It's just because we've actually been around a little while, and there's some things we have learned from our life experience, either to validate what's going on, to see and bless with goodness, sometimes offer tidbits of advice, etc. I love the model that we see from that concept of the gospel. It's really quite wonderful. And as we try to be more like our Father in heaven, boy, what great parents, grandparents, siblings, aunts, uncles we can truly become.
So going right along with that, what is the role of a grandparent? Maybe the role is just to love unconditionally, like our Father in heaven loves us.
Oh, you know, that's so nice. Love as our Father loves.
No, so that every time our children now who are married and establishing a family and our grandchildren are in our presence or in our home, they know that we love them unconditionally, no matter what.
That's good. I like this. And along that line is, in that love, we are available as our Father in heaven is available. That might not mean that we're always present, for example, but that means that we are available when the time comes to be able to nurture and to lead and to love. There's so many wonderful aspects of this experience, of that godly model.
Isn't it interesting that in the plan that our Heavenly Father's provided for us to live, He's provided multiple witnesses almost along that path. And when you think about the fact that you're part of that and that your job hasn't ended just with being a parent, that you become a multiple witness along that path again in a different way, that's quite remarkable, isn't it?
It's quite remarkable. And what a privilege and a blessing. Well, sadly, we are out of time already. We've been talking about the experiences of grandparenting, but mostly focusing on this concept of role. I think of a statement by Elder Ballard where he said, "I hope parents will not overlook the potentially powerful asset grandparents can be." And I'm grateful that we have an opportunity to talk a little bit more about this in an upcoming episode where we can, now with a foundation of what grandparents can and should be doing in this gospel model, is to start to talk about the potentially powerful asset that grandparents can be, ways that grandparents can be involved, way parents can involve grandparents, and talk about some practical experiences and ways that we can nurture this. I thank you for your comments. I'm jotting down notes. I've jotted down some things and mental notes and things in my heart. I'm thinking, I can improve. I need to be better. So I appreciate the things that you've shared. I don't know if I'm going to be a very good King Matt or like you've said, but I have inspired saying,
better.
How can I do this a little bit more? So I appreciate this. And I invite all to be able to join us as we discuss more about grandparents. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.